Good morning. This morning, I'm going to talk about Zen Master Dogen's fascicle on the Eight Awakenings of Great Beings. It has different titles depending on who translates it. But Dogen, this is the last talk of Dogen before he died. And he said that this was Shakyamuni's last sermon. So it turns out that both Shakyamuni and Dogen talked about the same thing, these eight awarenesses of great beings. So this is a very practical way of that both Dogen and Shakyamuni presented at his students as his farewell talk, and how to practice. One of the eight major practices, fundamental practices. And I'm talking about this in keeping with our practice period. As some guidelines for how do we practice during this time, and of course for all time, but especially now. Sometimes in the practice period I would give people or suggest that you pick out one practice that you feel would be beneficial for your practice. And so as I go through these eight aspects, you might pick up on one of these aspects as some subject of your own that fits with one of these aspects. So the eight awakenings of great beings. And here's what Dogen says. All Buddhas are great beings. With great beings, that which great beings practice is called the Eight Awakenings. Practicing these awakenings is the basis for nirvana. This is the last teaching of our original teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha, which he gave on the night he entered Parinirvana. So, the first awakening is to have few desires. Dogen talks about this incessantly in all of his fascicles. He's always saying that the main thing is to have few desires. We usually call this not to be greedy. He says to refrain from wisely coveting the objects of the sense desires, it's called few desires. And then he says, the Buddha said to his monks, you can, I'll say students, students know that people who have many desires intensely seek for fame and gain. Therefore, they suffer a great deal. Those who have few desires do not seek for fame and gain and are free from them. So they are without such troubles. Having few desires is itself worthwhile. It is even more so as it creates various merits. Those who have few desires need not flatter to gain others' favor. Those who have few desires are not pulled by the sense organs. They have a serene mind and do not worry, because they are satisfied with what they have and do not have a sense of lack. Those who have few desires experience nirvana, and this is called few desires. So it's interesting what Dogen emphasizes here. He does say not pulled by the sense organs, but he doesn't emphasize that. What he emphasizes is the need for fame and gain. the need to be somebody, the desire to be outstanding, so that people will admire you. I think that's very, very interesting. And throughout Dogen's, when Dogen went to China, and throughout Dogen's career, he's always pointing out monks or teachers who set themselves up in some way in order to gain fame, become famous, and to curry favor. This is, of course, an important factor for him. But, you know, needing too much, we live in a society, of course, which promotes fame and gain, and this greediness or acquisitive or coveting desire is an ego builder. So what he's really talking about is not that you shouldn't have some good position, but he's talking about needing to create a big sense of self, which actually is a balloon. It's a kind of expansive hot air balloon. Hot air balloon. I think of ego sometimes as a big hot air balloon which covers and expands, but is easily popped. It's not a solid position from which to operate. And when we, if you look at the financial situation in America, in the world, we talk about balloons. It's not just the situation that's a balloon, it's the perpetrators also who are balloons. It's ego building and covetousness. Who needs so much? Who needs so much? So that brings us to the second awakening, is to know how much is enough. These two aspects are complementary. They're almost the same thing. How much is enough? He says, to know how much is enough, even if you already have something, you set a limit for yourself for using it, so you should know how much is enough. The Buddha said, if you want to be free from suffering, you should contemplate knowing how much is enough. By knowing it, you are in the place of enjoyment and peacefulness. If you know how much is enough, you are contented even when you sleep on the ground. If you don't know it, you are discontented even when you are in heaven. You can feel poor even if you have much wealth. You may be constantly pulled by the five desires and pitied by those who know how much is enough. This is called to know how much is enough. Suzuki Roshi talked about a lamp and its light. That what practice is adjusting the lamp so that it's not that you put out the fire. It's that there's always has to be the flame. But the flame always has to be adjusted according to the circumstances. If it's too much, the lamp gets all burned out and black. And if it's not enough, you can't see what you're doing. So how do desire is like this big flame that we're always dealing with. Desire turns the world, and it turns our world. So, not knowing, it's like fire, the direct access to fire, and it makes us bold, and it makes us motivated. So, this fire gets attracted to many things. If it's too high, if it's too much behind it, then it burns up what we want. If we are pursuing a someone that we think we love, this fire burns very brightly, and if we can't have it, it just burns us up, and we suffer. So knowing how to preserve the right light without burning up the lamp, without burning ourselves out, and how to actually manage so that we can do whatever we need to do and have good relations with everybody in the world. It's all a matter of adjusting the lamp. So wanting too much is getting too bright a light, and it blinds us. So when objects in the world are offered to us, they often blind us, and we can't really find our way. So we need to be able to adjust the lamp just right. That's actually practice. This is the essence of practice at all times. We should be practicing this at all times, how to adjust the lamp so that it lights our way without burning everything up or getting too dim. So you know that our standard of living is very high, because there's never enough. Whenever we keep raising the ante of the standard of living in this, in our society, and in other parts of the world, the standard of living is going down. So this is like bad adjustment, really bad adjustment. We're burning ourselves out, and the rest of the world is suffering from not enough. So how do we control ourselves so that we don't get caught by this? So this is like knowing what is enough. If you go to the supermarket, there's an endless variety of things that you can have. You can have it all. This is the devil. It is. You can, if you want to speak in those terms. You can have it all. All you have to do is just keep working harder to make more money to have it all. And when you get something, then you have to have something else, because once you get it, it's no longer satisfying. This is the problem with desire. Once you get what you want, then you have to up the ante to get something even better. And then when you get that, you have to up the ante to get something even better, or more, or different, or... because the variety becomes the spice, which is really tasty. So we all suffer from this, you know. We all suffer from this. And even if we don't want to, we can't help it. Because who wants to be out of step with society? But, and if we don't keep the economy going by buying things, it will fall down. As it's falling down. So, it's a bind. So the practice is, how do you know how much is enough? You forget about whether you're supporting society or not. So, what is wealthy and what is poor? Wealthy is the person who has enough. Poor is the one who doesn't have enough. So, the great moguls of industry are the poor because they never have enough. Someone who is voluntarily satisfied with what they have is wealthy. So it really has nothing to do with goods. It has to do with our state of mind. So the third awakening is to enjoy serenity. Now this particular part doesn't really apply so much to us. It applied to Dogen in his time and his place in his monastic life. But this can also be applied to us according to our situation. He says, the third awakening is to enjoy serenity. This is to be away from the crowds and stay alone in a quiet place, which is very hard. This is called to enjoy serenity in seclusion. The Buddha said, monks, if you want to have the joy of serene non-doing, you should be away from the crowds and stay alone in a quiet place. A still place is what Indra and the other devas revere. Indra is often brought into this, even though he's not a Buddhist. By leaving behind your relations as well as others, and by living in a quiet place, you may remove the conditions of suffering. If you are attached to crowds, you will receive suffering, just like a tree that attracts a great many birds and gets killed by them. If you are bound by worldly matters, you will drown in troubles, just like an old elephant who is stuck in a swamp and can't get out of it. This is called to enjoy serenity and seclusion. This is a mixed bag. Because he's talking to monks. That he's not talking to lay people or talking to monks. But it's interesting. I remember I've always thought about this. When the birds sit on the tree, too many birds, they ruin the tree. And I thought, is that really so? I've never seen that. But when I went to Houston, outside of Houston, there is a bird sanctuary, great bird sanctuary, big island, surrounded by a lake. And it's like, at dusk, all the birds return to the island. And it's a rookery. And it's just this great din of primitive bird sounds. And it's just like being thrown back into 1 million BC. You get that feeling. And there are crocodiles in the lake. not crocodile, but
alligators.
But there are these trees that the birds light on, and they're totally dead because so many birds are always lighting on them every day. Interesting. Anyway, serenity and tranquility are two. Serenity is like the sun going down at dusk. The whole sky, the world is serene. Tranquility is like a very clear lake without any ripples. There's the two aspects. But he's saying to enjoy serenity, but it could be serenity and tranquility. But it really means for us to have a calm mind, to not let anything upset you. That's what Suzuki Roshi would talk about when he talks about having a settled mind, being settled in your hara. But it's also true that if we need to always have people around, we always need to be leaning on something, and we're attached to the momentum of our life, and we can't stop, then there's something wrong. So, how do you, you know, sometimes when I'm going down the freeway at night, and I'm thinking, gee, you know, supposing the car had to stop, there's nothing around, there's nobody there, and you're there in the middle of the woods. The momentum of your life has stopped, and you're just there now, in totally unfamiliar territory. What do you do? Where are you? So, in the, actually, that's where we always are, but because we keep our momentum going, we're skipping along the ground. But actually, we're always in that place of mystery, or is not driven by momentum. So we gear up our lives, and in the momentum of our lives, we always think, well, what do we do next? What's next? What's next? Because if there's nothing next, then we're lost. So the wonderful thing about Zazen is that it all stops. We don't worry about what's next. Everything stops. And then we can start again with the momentum. But how do we carry that stillness, tranquility, within our momentum? So the fourth awakening is called diligent effort. So this is a contrast. These two balance each other. One is tranquility of doing nothing, and the other is diligent effort of doing something. There's always a balance. So the Buddha said, the fourth awakening is diligent effort. It is to engage ceaselessly in wholesome practices. In other words, continuous practice. This is what is called diligent effort, for it is refinement without mixing in other activities. You keep going forward without turning back. Dogen calls this gyoji, continuously practicing, so that practice is the center of your life. And therefore, you always know what you're doing. Even though you stray, even though you fail or whatever, you always know where you can come back to. The practice is always open, and you can just come back. So, but the effort is to continually practice in every situation. So in every situation you say, how is this practice? When you're dying in the middle of the road, how is this practice? What is my practice now? So The Buddha said, if you make diligent effort, nothing is too difficult. That's why you should do so. It is like a thread of water piercing through a rock by constantly gripping. If your mind continues to slacken, it is like taking a break from hitting stones before they spark. You can't get fire that way. What I am speaking of is diligent effort. So it's like day by day, moment by moment, striking the stones together to get a spark so you can start a fire. So it's like keeping the flame alive, actually. Keeping that flame directed in a certain way so that it doesn't get out of hand and burn up the forest. It lights your way without burning up what's around you, or without attracting unwanted circumstances. So it's really like, this is my experience has always been, if I continually practice, no matter how bad I am or how what I do wrong or how I go off, as long as I continually practice, the universe takes care of me. Because practice is to be in accord with the universal order. That's what practice is, to be in accord with the universal order. What else could we want? So the fifth awakening is not to neglect mindfulness. Mindfulness, it is also called to maintain right thought, of course. Because mindfulness is thinking. So, how do you maintain right thought? This helps you to guard the Dharma so you don't lose it. It is called to maintain right thought, or not to neglect mindfulness. The Buddha said, monks, for seeking a good teacher and for good help, there is nothing like not neglecting mindfulness. If you practice this, the robbers of desire can't enter you. Therefore, you should always maintain mindfulness in yourself. If you lose it, you will lose all merits. When your mindfulness is solid, you will not be harmed, even if you go into the midst of the robbers of the five senses. It is like wearing armor and going into a battlefield, so there is nothing to be afraid of. It is called not to neglect mindfulness. So, there are various kinds of armor. One is putting a big steel suit on, but there are other ways, you know, to protect yourself. And one of the best ways to protect yourself is not to protect yourself. To just be open. Malleable. Malleability. Armor suggests stiffness. We are stiffening up all of our buildings in America, in California, to withstand earthquakes, which is good. But after the big Tokyo earthquake, many, many years ago, Frank Lloyd Wright built the Tokyo Grand Hotel on rollers. Rather than stiffness, he built it on rollers so that the building would be flexible and move and not fall down. We also say that tall trees that are very stiff are easy to push over, but grass bends in the wind and you can't destroy it. Not destroyed by disasters. So That's interesting. When your mindfulness is solid, you will not be harmed, even if you go into the midst of the robbers of the five senses. So I think flexibility is an important factor, and certainly the most important factor in Zazen. Most important factor in Zazen is flexibility. To not be stiff and think that you're holding up some big edifice through muscular tightness. Because it's all balance and flexibility. And the way we hurt ourselves in Zazen is through stiffness, through resistance. That's how we hurt ourselves in Zazen. If we have flexibility, you won't hurt yourself. But that's what we have to learn through the hard knocks of sitting. So the fifth awakening is not to neglect mindfulness. Like, what am I doing now? What am I doing? That's mindfulness. You know, there is the mindfulness of the fork is now going up to the mouth, and the mouth is now opening, and now the fork is going down, and the hand is going. That's one aspect of mindfulness. But it really means, what is practice now? How do I practice in this situation? When I'm having a terrible argument with somebody, what is practice now? That's mindfulness. What do I do now? How do I express the Dharma in this situation? So the sixth awakening is to practice meditation. To abide in Dharma without being confused is called stability in meditation. So stability is called samadhi, right? Samadhi has various meanings, but here it means stability. When we sit in the full lotus position, this is called the great stable position, because it's a triangle. Your seat is a triangle, the legs and your behind. So, and this triangle is very stable and allows samadhi to arise through that stability, because you're not thinking about something outside of the situation, and you're letting go of dropping body and mind, so to speak. And stop thinking about something, and samadhi is your natural state of mind, even though it's not a state of mind. It's your natural state when it's not obscured by interference. But then there's samadhi of stillness and samadhi of movement. Stability. Great stability. So it's being always centered, knowing where your center is and how you move or sit from your center in balance. So Buddha said, monks, if you gather your mind, it will abide in stability. One definition of sesshin is gathering the mind. But it's also gathering body, mind, and breath. Or it's also being one with the universe, with the universal order. If you gather your mind, you will abide in stability. Then you will understand the birth and death of all things in the world. Buddhist meditation basically is to be aware of the arising and ceasing of phenomena. The rising and ceasing of the breath, the rising and ceasing of how everything appears and ceases to appear. So you're contemplating the impermanence of all phenomena. You will continue to endeavor in practicing various aspects of meditation. When you have stability, your mind will not be scattered. It will be like a well-roofed house or a well-built embankment, which will help you maintain the water of understanding and keep you from being drowned. This is called stability in meditation. So, it's like containment. You know, it's like you have a bank, and the moisture or the water of stability is contained within that embankment. And there's something called leaking. That's when your mind starts wandering and you start taking up extraneous, unimportant things, and then it all leaks out. So the energy, that all that energy which is contained, which you do experience when you're sitting zazen and when you're attentive to what you're doing, gets dissipated. So samadhi is also like concentration, right? So what is concentration? There is concentration on a single point. And when you read the books on meditation, they say to concentrate on a single point to the exclusion of everything else. But that's only one aspect of meditation, of concentration. There's also concentration which is not focused on any one particular thing, but is total concentration without effort. It's simply opening the eyes, opening the ears, opening the mind, and letting everything be seen as it is at once. So you open your eyes and you see the whole room without trying to see anything. That's concentration. Big mind concentration. And then whatever moves, you can pick it up. Or it's picked up. The seventh awakening is to cultivate wisdom. It is to listen, contemplate, practice, and say, and have realization. The Buddha said, "Monks, if you have wisdom, you are free from greed. You will always reflect on yourself and avoid mistakes. Then you will attain liberation in the Dharma I'm speaking of. If you don't have wisdom, you will neither be a follower of the way nor a layperson." And then, of course, a layperson is also a follower of the way. But in those days, the lay people, and up to this day, supported the monks. That's why he says that. That's the usual paradigm, is that the lay people support the monks. In Berkeley Zendo, the monks and the lay people are all the same. We don't have the Dhamma that supports the temple and the monks. Everybody contributes to the support. So that's a different paradigm. Indeed, wisdom is a reliable vessel to bring you across the ocean of old age, sickness, and death. It's a bright lamp that brings light into the darkness of ignorance. It is an excellent medicine for all of you who are sick. It is a sharp axe to cut down the tree of delusion. Thus, you can deepen awakening through the wisdom of listening, contemplation, and practice. If you are illuminated by wisdom, even if you use your physical eyes, you will have clear sight, insight. This is called to cultivate wisdom. So, but we have four aspects of wisdom. One is the wisdom of the mirror wisdom, which everything is reflected without distortion. So we rarely see without distortion. because just naming something is a distortion. Just thinking about something is a distortion. Because we always create a picture of what we see. So to be able to see without creating a distortion or a picture is called clear seeing. Seeing as it is, which is rare. And then there's the wisdom of equality, in which we realize that we're all the same. We're all exactly the same. We all have the same basic nature. And then the wisdom of discernment is the wisdom that realizes we're all different and appreciates the difference in all things. So equality and difference is where the juncture of equality and difference is where we live on each moment. And then there's the wisdom of perfecting of action. When these three wisdoms are in harmony, then our actions express that wisdom. So the eighth awakening, the last one, is awakening. The eighth awakening is not to be engaged in hollow discussions. Another translation is idle talk, which is the same thing. Don't get engaged. It's interesting that that's the last one, right? Stop gossiping. Stop speculating as if you know what you're talking about. It is to experience realization and be free from the discriminatory thinking. With thorough understanding of the true mark of all things, it is called not to be engaged in hollow discussions. Suzuki Roshi once talked about this as a group of intellectuals sitting around drinking coffee in a coffee shop discussing the essence of Zen. The Buddha said, if you get into hollow discussions, your mind will be scattered. Then you will be unable to attain liberation, even if you have left the household. So you should immediately leave behind scattered mind and hollow discussions. If you wish to attain the joy of serenity, you need to cure the sickness of hollow discussions. This is called not to be engaged in hollow discussions. In other words, you should just practice and keep your mouth shut. That's what Kanjiri Roshi used to say. Just shut your mouth and sit down and shut your mouth. So, those are the eight. And these are the eight awakenings. Each awakening contains all eight. Yes, each one contains all the others. So if you practice one, you realize that the other seven are there as well, because they're all supporting each other. They're all aspects of the same thing. So when one is prominent, the others are there, maybe hidden, but there. So each awakening contains all eight. Thus there are 64 awakenings. When awakenings are practiced thoroughly, their number is countless. When they are practiced in summary, there are 64. So these are the last words of great teacher Shakyamuni Buddha, the ultimate admonition in the Mahayana teaching. He said, at midnight of the 15th day of the 15th month, monks, you should always endeavor wholeheartedly to search for the way of liberation. All things in the world, whether they are in motion or not, are insecure and bound to decay. Now all of you, be quiet. Do not speak. Time is passing. I'm going to cross over. This is my last admonition to you. And without expounding Dharma any further, the Buddha entered Parinirvana. And then Dogen talks about it a little bit more. But, I think these eight are good cover a lot of territory for how we can concentrate on the practice. So if you like, I can post those eight, and you can remember them. Yeah. Oh, do you have any question? I mean, we don't have time for much, but Nancy.
What's parinirvana?
Well, parinirvana is a term that means great, and it's a term usually used for the Buddha's decease, Buddha's final decease. When he goes to wherever he goes. Or doesn't go. Yeah.
What do you think it meant for Dogen to say not to seek fame and fortune, given that he went to China and brought back this new form of Buddhism and probably had a lot of ambition to, at least by the end of his life, had some notoriety?
So, I didn't quite get the question.
Him to say don't seek fame and fortune, do you think, I mean, I assume he didn't actually do that, but he must have done something else to get where, must have had some passion or ambition to get where he was.
Yes.
But he must have done that in a way without seeking fame and fortune, which to me seems like a good
thing. Well, yes, it's a little questionable. In China, he saw these people who didn't have the qualifications, trying to get what they could get without, in other words, trying to grasp meaning something that they didn't deserve. Whereas what Dogen gained was due to him. In other words, he didn't promote himself to get some fame, but people supported him to do that. So we're talking about someone who buys their way. You could do this, and this became prominent in Japan too. If you had the money, you could buy an abbotship someplace, and become, make yourself into a famous person. Or you could bribe a teacher. It was fairly common for a teacher to give a portrait of himself to his leading disciple, and so sometimes monks would come to the teacher and they say, "Can I have your portrait?" And he wouldn't say no, and then they could produce the portrait as if they had been, given this as the leading disciple of the teacher, so, as a way of gaining fame. I studied with, I was the famous, I was the inheritor of his Dharma. Right? So that's like trying to gain fame through surreptitious means. Or just working for that. Just, doing what you do just in order to get ahead. So Dogen's always talking about, don't worry about that. Just practice. James?
This is probably a related question. You started out talking about desire.
Yes.
And we talk about desire and we talk about intention a lot.
Yes.
Are they two aspects of the same thing or are they different?
Yeah, no. Desire, as I said, is the great fire. Uh-huh. Right? So you can point it in any direction. So if one can have the desire for illusory things, and one can have the desire for the way. So when we have the desire for the way, it's called way-seeking mind. And it's no longer in the realm of what we call desire, although it is, it's true desire, rather than foolish desire. So desire, you can't, if you eliminate desire, you just become, limp. So when desire is being filling you, you feel alive and awake, right? No matter what it is for the moment. True desire, a fulfilled desire, what are you seeking, mine, is like more even, whereas our foolish desires are more like big flashes, you know. And so we get hooked on getting, you know, doing more extreme things in order to get the adrenaline going, which is very satisfying for the moment. But desire, when it's channeled into way-seeking mind, is less exciting in that way and more even. So it's more boring. Maybe, but not really. Not really. I've never found practice to be boring. I've never found zazen to be boring. Boring is like when there's a gap. It's like when you don't know what to do. And then when you bridge the gap, it's no longer boring. But even if it's boring, it's okay.